California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. I'm your host, Phil. Along with me, as always, is my trusty co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. And tonight, we have a special guest, first time on the episode. So first time, new guest. I don't know why it's taken this long to get her on the show. A fellow attorney, just like me, she's been sounding the alarm on a whole slew of bad bills that have been coming out of Sacramento. But I mean, bad bills come out of Sacramento all the time anyway, so it's not shocking. Nicole, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's definitely been long overdue, but I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, and so for the people who don't know who you are, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself before we hop into all these bad bills?
Okay, well, I am a mom of three now, and I am a lawyer like Phil, and I kind of have fallen into this constitutional law, human and civil rights advocacy work, legal work. I don't really know what to explain it to, but just to, so people know very quickly, like I was just told, I want everybody to know, I was very terrified of COVID. I locked myself down, my family down. Our two daughters have medical conditions that made me very scared of COVID. But it was while I was in COVID and while we were locked down that I started to see things on the internet and social media that really opened my eyes to what was going on, and really in a weird way was lucky enough to live in Orange County where we had some very egregious bad actors, including the COVID-19 vaccine digital passport, which San Diego, Orange County, and Ventura were the two pilot, the three pilot programs for the digital passport, which is what made kind of expose me or revealed to me that this was not truly about our health, safety, and welfare. This was about control, tracking and tagging and tracking and controlling us. And then when I started to see what was happening at our local board of supervisors, what was happening in the schools with children specifically, I just started like really, truly lost my mind. Like I had messages from people that were like, girl, get help. Like, you know, random people, you need help. You're crazy. And so I just started sending cease and desist letters, trying to explain the law to people, thinking that these people just didn't understand the Constitution. They just didn't understand what the education code meant or the health and safety code, to very quickly realize they knew exactly what they were doing. They knew exactly what the law said and they didn't care. So, I started my Facts, Law, Truth, Justice Instagram page because my personal page got really volatile and I also just didn't want my family exposed to that. So I started this like horrible handle that's like so many words long that no one remembers, but I couldn't decide. I thought the facts are important. Law is obviously important. And with the facts and the law, we can find truth and hopefully achieve justice. And I just was up all night and I couldn't figure which order or which words were more important. They all went together. So we formed Facts, Law, Truth, Justice. And then ever since then have been trying to just read the law. I was just talking to you guys offline that I'm not the smartest attorney and I'm not the most experienced attorney, but I can read. And I've always said the law is on your side. The law is on our side. The law is on our side. Like I would not have given up my career, clients, friends, family, colleagues, so many things if I didn't know that what I was standing for was the truth and like injustice and for the law. And so that's why where we're at right now, fighting for all of that and really to protect the children. That's my mission, is to protect children.
It's interesting during COVID. I think because everyone slowed down, but in my experience, a lot of attorneys all of a sudden turned into constitutional attorneys. Because I think we had a lot of time on our hands. We were just kind of sitting around going, okay, well, now what do we do? But we also watched what was happening in front of us. And a lot of questions came up that were new, novel legal theories. And, you know, if you're a legal nerd or you're an attorney, you kind of look at this stuff and you go, yeah, okay, is this constitutional? Does the state have power? Does the federal government have power? and there were arguments on both sides. So it was everybody became a constitutional attorney during COVID in one way or another, whether people got as active as you did, where they were filing lawsuits and fighting, or they just became commentators. So I don't know if I hope that's a good thing, that there's many more constitutional attorneys out there who are looking at all of this and seeing, you know, especially what was it last year? Was it Dr. Richard Pan? He was part of that vaccine group, and they were trying to push a whole slew of bad bills through and like more vaccine requirements. And thankfully, a lot of that stuff got pushed down and didn't actually go anywhere. But in terms of what's coming up in California, that's the point of tonight's episode. We're talking a lot about the legislation, because right now the legislation legislative session is ending coming up this week, I believe. And we want to let people know what's going on. What are the bills that are on their way to Governor Newsom's desk? Which ones have been signed already? What can people keep an eye out for? You provided us with a whole list. You have an actual fact sheet of bad bills that that were coming out. So I guess we can start there. Is there anyone in particular you want to start with to kind of highlight for people?
No, we have like a really bad situation in California right now. There are a couple of really, maybe someone needs to use the bathroom. What's up? Knocking up those balls. It's work. It's my friends. I'll be right there. I'm almost done. Okay, we'll be back. We have, you know, I personally believe that Assembly Bill 665 is the worst bad bill that we have. That bill was written by Assemblywoman Wendy Carrillo, but let's just call a spade a spade. It was co-authored by Senator Scott Wiener. I mean, I need people to understand, like, going back to my background, like, I didn't even know who my assembly person or my senator was. I did not know who my representative was. I did not know about the legislative process. And I share this because it's very easy to understand. One of my goals is obviously to educate on these bills, but also empower people like to understand this process so that they can get engaged, because you absolutely, going back to being like a constitutional attorney, what I'm about to describe to you and what I've been doing is what every single one of us can be doing. You do not need to be an attorney to do what I'm about to share with you. We are American citizens, and we are, live in a constitutional republic. And these people that I'm about to talk to you about, our representatives work for us. They are elected representatives. They're supposed to represent our priorities and values and goals and needs. They're literally our public servants. This is not inflammatory words. This is the reality of the situation. And so I just want you guys to keep in perspective what I'm talking about. So, like I was just mentioning, every year, several thousand bills, or over 1,000 bills, I would say, come through the legislature, and representatives present bills. And he just mentioned Richard Pan, but Senator Scott Wiener is another. Senator Scott Wiener, Assemblywoman Buffy Wicks, Assemblywoman Wendy Carrillo. There are Senator Matt, or I think it's Senator Haney, Assemblymember Evan Lowe. I guess Alex Lee is now on our radar. There are some representatives that were always like kind of on the lookout for their bills. So what happened last year with all the COVID bills is that Senator Scott Wiener authored many, many, many bad bills that were basically, as you guys all know, hopefully by now, we're basically making our lives contingent upon getting the COVID-19 vaccine, whether it was Jabs for Jobs, AB 1993, or SB 866, Jabs in order for your kids to go to school. There was bills that were saying that law enforcement had to enforce health orders from, you know, the state, otherwise they would lose funding. So many bad bills all circulating around COVID-19 and these alleged states of emergencies. So that was last year. So this year we were bracing ourselves for what we have seen as like I'm pretty sure people are aware, trans LGBTQT really like movement that's happening right now. And we had heard a lot coming from Scott Wiener, but we didn't see any bill, really any bills come from him. And so what we saw him do was partner with assembly people so that these bills flew through the assembly under the radar, because there were these no-name assembly people who are either have higher political aspirations or don't know what's going on, that basically were his lackeys that authored these bills, were the primary authors of these bills. And then he was a principal co-author, but we all know they're really coming from him. So AB 665 was written by Wendy Carrillo and Senator Scott Wiener. Neither one of them have children. And what they did and what they always do is they try and pick some like hot button topic, really ride the coattails of immigrant minority kind of disenfranchised communities, say that they are trying to grant them access, parity, empower them. Those are really, you know, key, you know, trigger words, keywords. And that's how they pass these bills. So you don't want to really oppose these bills because you don't want to talk, you don't want to be the one opposing a bill that's going to grant, you know, children on Medi-Cal access to mental health services so that they don't commit suicide, right? That's how the bill was written. But when you look at the bill, AB 665 amends a code section, a family code section, and will allow 12-year-olds, any 12-year-old and up who is deemed to be mature enough by a professional person, will allow them to run away from home with zero notice to you as a parent and check into a government shelter, where they will be, obviously there will be adults in that that residential government shelter who will be like, I guess, checking them in and taking care of them. And where we are confident, given the conversations we already see children having at schools, for example, with teachers and faculty and staff and counselors, there will be conversations about your home life, what, whether they feel comfortable at home, whether they feel supported at home and understood at home. And mind you, we're talking about kids in adolescent age, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, like a lot of us really didn't like our parents during that time anyways. Now they're going to be in a government shelter who is working hand in hand, lockstep with CPS, having private conversations. And we are confident that they will be opening up criminal investigations, CPS investigations of parents in order to remove these children officially and permanently from your home. So to me, AB 665 is the worst bill, because all of the other bills kind of, not that they don't matter, but if your 12-year-old is out of your home in a government shelter under the thumb of a government official adult who is like taking care of them, then everything else doesn't matter, because they're going to be able to coerce them or manipulate them or, you know, whatever, fear monger them or whatever it is, drip them into believing whatever it is they want them to believe to go along with whatever systems or policies or beliefs that they have. So it kind of is like it emancipates minors as young as 12. And that to me is the most egregious, dangerous bill of all.
It kind of reminds me of the bill that passed last year. We discussed it on the podcast. It was, if Camille might remember, if correct me if I'm trying to remember this. This was if okay, a I'm child so runs away.
I can't see you guys, so I was just talking because I was like, I can't see you, but you're there.
We're still here. Yeah, we're still here. Okay. Yeah, everything's good. And we heard everything, so.
Someone come back.
If we can't hear you, we'll say something. We'll just start talking and say we can't hear you. Okay, we weren't just staring at a blank. Yeah, we weren't just staring into silence, so.
Okay, because I was just, I'm like, I'm just going to keep talking until someone comes back. So you're there. So anyways, that was a very long-winded explanation. I can give you a shorter one, but keep going. So it reminds you of what bill from the other year?
It was the bill that, what is it? If kids run away from home because they deemed California a sanctuary state. So if kids run away, a court order from another state, California, won't abide by, which to me violates the federal constitution, privileges and immunities of other states. I mean,
legal kidnapping.
So it's insane that California just goes, we're not going to listen to what other states have to say in terms of family custody. That kind of sounds like it, where the government just kind of steps in and goes, nope, we're going to take control of your child. There's nothing you can do. That's basically it. And the state has more authority over. It's almost like at this point, the state of California is almost in a position where their position is, we're allowing you, we're granting you permission to have children and to raise them.
Right.
But we have the ultimate say. And at the end of the day, we can pull your kids away. We can put them in these residential shelters. At the end of the day, they're our children. So you enjoy the privilege of having these kids from the state. So does that sound correct?
Yeah. I mean, we've heard them. We've actually heard them say, I mean, we've heard even Joe Biden say, like, these children are not your children. These children are our children. They're not your children. They're not your children. And people confuse this. Actually, it's really interesting. When I was at Mass this weekend, the priest was talking about how, like, children, he's from Ghana, our priest is from Ghana. And he was saying that, like, when the children would run around the village, that, like, if you did something naughty, like, that your auntie would spank you or ground you or, you know, put you on timeout or whatever it was. And he's like, oh, you know, our children, you know, the children were the children of the village. But, and I do believe that it takes a village to raise a child, but, and that's your community. That's your extended, mm-hmm. your nuclear family, your extended family, your aunties, your uncles, your neighbors, you know, certainly. But those people are not the state. Those aren't the government. Children are not, and people, I think the reason why I point that out is because I think people have confused that. It takes a village of us, of individuals, of citizens to raise a child. But we, I mean, unless we are elected into office, we are not the state. The government mm-hmm. is supposed to, and you already know that, it is supposed to be a small government of finite, limited, enumerated powers. And we, and that's why I kind of started this podcast with saying, you know, the government is, these government agencies and these boards are the, it's from the law, instrumentalities of our creation. We created them. We give them, we don't even give them our power. It's almost like proxy. It's like voting by proxy. Like, we can't all 32 million or however many millions of us Californians go to the Capitol and vote on laws. We have to, we give them the authority to vote.
Did she freeze?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you froze for just a second.
You froze for a second.
Sorry. So, you know,
you ended at 32 million.
Oh, that there's 32 million of us and we cannot all go to the Capitol and legislate and lobby for these bills. We have elected representatives to mm-hmm. serve us in their public, in the public capacity. And so, yeah, that's exactly what's happening. It's similar. I mean, what's going on in California is even worse because we know that Governor Newsom is gunning for presidency. He's saying he's not going for 2024, but 2028. So what happens in California will spread across the country. And he has already demonstrated mm-hmm. time and again, like you mentioned last year, he does not care about the California Constitution. He does not care about the U.S. Constitution, the federal constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. And he will just run amok. He will run ramshock over that. He does not care about any of these constitutional provisions, even though he has taken an oath to uphold the state, federal constitution and the law. So it's pretty terrifying. He does not care. California does not care.
I want to expand on just a couple things, because this, there are already provisions in place with this this law, but this is now, the child doesn't have to present any sign of harm, correct? Like, correct. It could just be any child, whereas before there had to be, they were possibly suicidal or there was harm going on in the home, some sort of abuse, and now it, right. that they're trying to erase all that. It's just any child, right. they can decide to do this. And right. This is so bizarre to me because the state of California has, I believe, about 60,000 children in foster care right now. Where do they expect all these children when they make them wards of the state? Where do they expect them to go? And we are already hearing many people are wonderful foster parents. I'm not putting that down, but we do hear horrific stories of, you know, these teenagers that go through abuse in these foster homes. And then they're often the turnarounds of the homes because they're kicked out of one home and into another. And
right.
I just, as a parent, am always baffled, absolutely baffled that they're trying to separate children from parents. But then I'm glad you mentioned Mass because I wasn't sure where you were with your faith and everything. But the Bible, I feel like Democrats are trying so hard to take the Bible and then just make everything about it opposite and illegal. You know, the Bible's so clear about parents training your child in the way that they should go. There's all these verses. And in fact, there's entire chapters dedicated to parenting and raising your children. And then Democrats are like, nope, Nope. And if you do any of that, we're going to take them away from you.
Well, I mean, and then they just lie. Like Governor Newsom is like, yeah, this is the, we have the strongest protections for local control. We are the freest state with the freest, you know, free speech protections and right and rights. And yet we passed last year, AB 2098, which silenced doctors and medical professionals who were, you know, spreading information that ran contrary to the then at that moment current COVID-19 narrative. That is, he literally suppressed free speech. That was to silence people from speaking and communicating. AB 665, well, AB 957, for example, is another horrifying bill that says you must affirm your child. And if you don't affirm your child, you could lose custody of your child. It says that judges must give priority to those. And this is in effect. This is not what the bill says, but we've already seen this happening, is that judges are giving priority or like favoring, I should say, parents who affirm their child's self-selected gender identity, whatever that identity is, whatever age that child is. If you are religious and your religion prohibits you, or, you know, doesn't believe in the transgender ideology, and your religion prohibits you from doing that, that is a violation of your First Amendment right to free exercise of religion. It violates your First Amendment right to speak freely, say, I don't agree with this. It's actually compelled speech. If you do say, yes, I affirm my child, even though you don't affirm your child, you wouldn't ordinarily do that. So, I mean, these are horrifyingly egregious bills. They completely run afoul of, again, even the California Constitution and certainly the U.S. Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land. And these protections are well settled. Okay. These are fundamental rights that are enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. They have been protected. Parental rights, your right to privacy has been protected for over 100 years by the U.S. Supreme Court over and over again.
Poor Camille is outnumbered by two Catholics on this podcast.
I'm a Christian. It's okay.
Well, I hear enough people who say, like, oh, Catholics aren't Christian.
Yeah, no, we just like to
what's a denomination? Sorry, we're not going to get on a rant on that. I feel like we all probably pretty much believe the same. It's fine.
I mean, we're the original Christianity, but that's not the point of this podcast. Anyway, moving on, in terms of another bill I wanted to touch upon was AB 1078. And this has really become like a hot button issue because of what's going on. If you've been paying attention, like school board districts and Orange Unified just passed this same parental notification. Jonathan Zacherson, who's been on the show before, has been a big part of this in terms of getting these parental notification policies where they were trying to say if some child or student comes to a teacher and comes out as transgender, that the teacher's position was they wanted to keep it secret, but now they have this parental notification. So this sort of goes hand in hand with that. What's that?
Because on the one hand, they're saying if you don't affirm your child, we're going to take them away from you. Exactly. But then on the other hand, they're saying we need to keep this from the parents because they're in a dangerous situation. So we either can't or can't affirm them because we're not.
Right. So you must affirm, but we're not going to tell you, and you don't get to know.
Right.
So, so I've put these bills for this year really are like in two camps, but they all go together. And I would like to say for the record, a lot of these bills are trans oriented, transgender, gender affirming care oriented bills. This is not about transgender children. Okay. Right. Last year was not about COVID. Every single year, what I have kind of the analogy that I have come up with or whatever conveyed is each year they pick a hot button topic, and that is the Trojan horse. So when George Floyd died, it was, you know, systemic racism and racial disparities and you know, Black Lives Matter. And that was the Trojan horse that they tried to usher in all of these horrible bills. At the end of the day, were trying to strip us of our fundamental constitutionally protected rights. Okay. Mm-hmm. Last year, or like over like 2 years, was COVID. And with the COVID Trojan horse, they were trying to usher in, like, for example, SB 866 by Senator Scott Wiener was to empower minors to not just the COVID-19 vaccine, but to consent as young as 12 to all vaccines, right? Because there were Trump, MAGA, QAnon, literally, he was like, there are QAnon conspiracy parents who don't believe in vaccines, there are crazy anti-vaxxers, and these children do not deserve to suffer and die from COVID because their you know, parents are reading misinformation and they're misinformed QAnon conspiracy theorists. Literally, that is what he said. And he said it was about COVID-19 vaccines, but when you read the bill, it was about all vaccines. So then we would have had children as young as 12 in the state of California. If people do not know, you need to wake up. Your child as young as 12 has medical privacy and the right to consent to mental health treatment, substance abuse rehabilitative treatment, sexual reproductive health, including abortions. There's a slew of medical treatment and care that your child as young as 12 can already consent to. So he wanted to do substance abuse, sexual reproductive health, mental health services. And he would say, if your child can already get an abortion, why can't they just get a vaccine? It's just one shot. They can get this whole, you know, procedure done without you knowing, like, why not? And that's what's called a slippery slope in the law, Phil, you know that. So they were just building and building and building. And we have allowed this to happen because what they do is they take one horrifying, like you were mentioning, but Camille, one horrifying case. Of course, there is that one horrifying case of the 10-year-old who got raped by her father, who couldn't talk to anybody about it, but wanted to get an abortion or just reproductive health care and couldn't. And she was 10 or 12 or whatever the age was. And so we create a law around that one horrifying exception to the rule. And we've allowed consistently in California to allow these horrifying exceptions to swallow the rule. So now, again, in California, minors as young as 12 can consent to, again, I just really want people to understand, sexual reproductive health care, mental health care, substance abuse treatment. And he wanted to add vaccines. We were lucky enough to kill that because this year it's the trans Trojan horse. And I would bet my, you know, FLTJ that if last year he would have passed vaccines, he would have been like, they can already get abortions, they can already get vaccines, why not allow them consent to gender-affirming care? It would have been the next thing. So right now, this year is the trans Trojan horse. You know, it's a Trojan horse covered in the rainbow flag. No one wants to touch it because it's the hot button topic. All of these bills start with, you know, analysis of trans LGBTQ youth, how they're susceptible, mm-hmm. you know, to mental health issues, to suicidality, da 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 da. And then they're like, and that's why we need to increase the gas tax. It's right. Like, it has nothing to do with yeah. that, but they're right. using that as the there's no other word.
Kind of funny because on my notes for AB 957, which is the parents who don't affirm could lose custody, I actually yeah. wrote slippery slope because what in the future? Can they, well, we already did this. And now what are they? That's exactly what I wrote. Was you just said, yeah, I used to have a rant and this is going slightly off topic, but I have been, so my oldest is almost 18 and, I wasn't anti-vax. I just was very, it's my choice research. I didn't believe in getting them all done at one time kind of thing. So I was very pro not following the schedule and just doing what I wanted when I wanted. And I've always been like that. And I've also always homeschooled. So I didn't have to worry about those things for school. But that was something that I, like probably 12, 13 years ago, I started noticing this, like this funny little connection between, and I don't know how to articulate this very well, but between getting vaccines and owning our children. And I started using that kind of like, I'm like, okay, so they want, you know, they want our children as young as like two, starting in preschool. Yeah. And they want to like get them full-time education starting like 2 years old, all, you know, and not even just through high school because they want them in college. But I was like, they're going to start, they're mandating these vaccines. And then they're going to keep pressing them earlier. They're going to like all of a sudden mandate preschool for the 2 and 3 year olds. They're going to get them in school. They're going to get them vaccinated. They're going to make us follow these laws. And then they're going to teach the kids what they want to teach in public schools. And of course, they're always trying to outlaw homeschool. So they're going to get in the kids' heads starting at 2 years old.
Yep.
And you know, and then they're going to teach them, you need a good education because you need to do all this to get into a good college. Then, you know, they're going to get into college and then they're going to take out all these student loans that from the government, that they're going to owe the government and the government. And of course, they don't get a better job to pay more taxes. And so the government's trying to just own them from 2 years old and on.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting you say that because, you know, my family's from South America, and the better grades you get, the better school you get into, and the less you pay. So like the best universities in Argentina are free. I mean, that's how it should be, right? It should be, you know, meritocracy. It should be based. Like, yeah, the harder you work, the better grades you get. You should get, you know, rewarded for that. But it's totally what you said. That's exactly it. And I mean, oh, going back to the bad bills, we have, I mean, and it's, you know, California is a compulsory education state. That's why I tell people, like, they're coming after the kids because the kids are the lowest hanging fruit. And they make it super expensive for you to live here. Your children must go to school. So you have to, you know, like you brought it up so many times last year, Phil. It's like people can't even commute to work anymore. Like, you're creating this gas tax, and people aren't going to be able, like, people need to live in the suburbs and work in the city. And now they're eating up their, or not the gas tax, but the toll. I think it was a toll on the freeways, whatever. There was like a couple of them. There were several of them. It's like people can't even commute into work anymore. So they have your children over a barrel. They have you over a barrel. And we have these bills right now. AB 665 is emancipating minors. If your child can leave your home at age of 12 with zero allegations of incest, abuse, or danger, like they want to kill themselves. Right now in California, children as young as 12 can consent to mental health services, but without your knowledge or consent, like I was just mentioning. But the only way that they can leave your home and check into a residential shelter is if there are allegations and proof of abuse, incest, or that they are a danger to themselves or others. Like they want to commit suicide, or they want to kill their brother or their dad or their teacher or their whatever. And of course, we want those children to be removed from that kind of volatile situation. And then we'll figure out what's going on. But when you have that happening, then you have allegations of abuse, incest, or danger. You have CPS, you have someone actively stepping in to open up an investigation and usher that child in the system. And there will be an investigation, and rightfully so, because there's proof of incest, abuse, or danger. Right now, this bill, AB 665, gets rid of those requirements. So you, and this is what's going to happen. You're going to get in a fight with your child over TikTok or their grades or drinking and driving or having sex with their boyfriend or using social media too much or whatever it is. You're going to get a huge fight. You're going to slam the door. You're going to take their car keys, whatever it is. They're going to go to school where they've now installed 10,000 more of these professional people, they're called, in the schools who are literally looking for children. And they're going to go, how are you doing? What do you want to do? You know, what's going on? You look sad. Or they mention something to their teacher. They mention something to your counselor. And they're going to have a conversation and say, do you feel like comfortable going home? And you're like, not really. My dad was so pissed at me last night. My mom was so angry. And they're going to say, well, do you want to go cool off in a government shelter? And your child doesn't understand that they're going to go to a government shelter where they are looking for anything to open up an investigation on you. And then this is the antithesis of innocent until proven guilty and of due process. You have virtually, your children have been removed from you without any allegations of any wrongdoing. And now you're facing the expensive, like financially and time consuming, expensive and energy sucking, draining process of fighting child protective services without you, with having done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And so they're removing the children that way. They're removing the children with 957, because the child's going to be with the least mentally stable parent, right? The affirming right. parent. Those children will also, you know, could end up in foster care. And what you're saying about foster care, it has nothing to do with foster care people being good or bad. It has everything to do with the fact that there's 60,000 children. I think it's like 66,000 children in the state of California who are in the foster care system. We don't have, even if the most well-intentioned foster care system or home, there's simply not enough resources. They're sleeping on the floors. They're not supervised. Right. The children abuse each other. People don't realize that because they're up until 17. So you'll have an 8-year-old in there with a 17-year-old who has suffered a lot of trauma. They abuse each other. They're abused by the counselors. Counselors take them out of the homes. They traffic them. And traffickers wait outside of foster care homes because they know these children are vulnerable. They know they don't have adults who are waiting for them, who they are accountable to, who are, you know, taking care of them, tracking them, whatever, you know, people spin it as like, oh, they're not property and you don't want to control your property, whatever. They know that they don't have any adults, trusted adults who are taking care of them, who are going, are, you know where they are and are going to be concerned if they don't show up for 3 days. And so all of these bills are rife for abuse and trafficking. There's an Assembly Bill 223 is a bill no one wanted to talk about because it was super technical, by Christopher Ward. But Christopher Ward drafted a bill that says if an adult, any adult, there's no definition of adult, can file a petition for a name, gender, or sex identifier change confidentially. So now we have children in these residential shelters or living with a mentally unstable parent, right, who's the affirming parent or the most extremely affirming parent, or is a ward of the state because of another scenario I'll tell you about in a second. And now an adult, any adult, can file for virtually erase their identity confidentially. And you're the parent, you have no idea. You have no idea why your child's out of your house, you're fighting CPS, and someone has filed a petition to change their name, gender, and sex identifier. All of those markers are gone. Your child is erased. Like, this is not a, this is not the fire drill. Like, the fire, we are in the fire. This is the worst that I have seen. I mean, I've only been doing this for a couple of years, but Senator Scott Wiener and his cronies, his cartel, his child abusing human trafficking cartel are attacking families. They're attacking parents. They are actively removing children from loving two parent homes, whatever that home may look like. And no home is perfect, okay? No home is perfect. But they are criminalizing parents, demonizing them, turning children against their parents, in the school situation as well, telling children that their parents are going to abuse them, kick them out, don't understand them, go to the counselors. It is a full frontal 360 attack on the nuclear family, whatever that might look like in California. And so those are the two kind of camps. This started with 1078 and I got really off track, but again, they're trying to remove parents out of stable homes. And then if you can't, let's say you can cling to your home, your child and your custody, or even if you can't, they're in compulsory education, like Camille was just saying. And now we have AB 1078, AB 5, SB 596. We have Tony Thurmond coming down to meetings and threatening board members and parents. We have Gavin Newsom opening up investigations on school boards who are trying to protect kids and families. And we have Rob Bonta initiating lawsuits against conservative boards. And conservative, I don't mean Republican. Conservative, I mean traditional and respectful of families, local authority, the Constitution. So I would say traditional conservative boards who are following, you know, long time-tested rules. And I mean, I don't know, there's no other picture to paint. That is the picture. That is the reality of what's happening in California right now.
The funniest thing, or it's not funny, it's actually ironic. It's funny because you got to laugh at how absurd the left is and how hypocritical they are. They cry about, you know, this is an attack on our democracy. This is an attack on our democracy. Everything's an attack on our democracy. And now with the school boards and the fact that Rob Bonta and Gavin Newsom are basically going after every school board, is in our mind, it's an attack on, technically it's an attack on democracy and sort of the, separation of powers between local school boards and duly elected school board members. And this is something that I think was coming down the pike for COVID. And I remember talking about this a lot in my lives and stuff back during COVID, was like, you have to make sure you pay attention to everybody who is on your ballot all the way down to school board.
100%.
And a lot of people started to show up to school board meetings and they started to go, okay, I'm going to get involved. Now I get to see what's happening in my school boards or in my school. And now you have these school boards that are maybe right-leaning or more conservative. And they're implementing these parental notifications. They're spreading like wildfire because I think it's in the best interest of the kids and the parents. But now, because it goes against the agenda of Gavin Newsom and Rob Bonta, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, we love democracy, but no, we don't like democracy like that. Like, don't do it like that. because we're going to sue you and we're going to pass laws to stop it.
We're in an abusive relationship with our government. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you can just, first of all, Gavin Newsom is a narcissist. Number one. Number two, if you can just understand that they are literally gas, that's called gaslighting. He passes a law that silences doctors and then has the audacity at the same press conference, virtually almost, that he's signing in a bill that says you cannot speak freely based on your science, your personal experience, your whatever. We are the number one state protecting, you know, constitutional rights to free. It's being manipulative. It's called gaslighting. It's called lying. And it's like, we're in this abusive relationship with our government that, you know, they're just, he's slick and he's kind of handsome. If you're into that greasy, gross type, he could be charming and whatever. And he's literally abusing you, then telling you it's your fault that he's abusing you. I mean, it is repulsive. If you go look at psychology books 101, that is literally what we're dealing with. And that's why people are having, you know, cognitive dissonance. Everyone's cognitive. It's not freaking cognitive. They're lying to you. They're lying to you. They're abusing you. It doesn't make any sense, but you have got to get out and just take a step back and look at what they're doing. Look at their actions. Stop looking at the puppets and what they're saying. Look what they're doing. What they're doing is this. They are taking school boards who are implementing policies. Mind you, you in California, school districts and schools have to tell you if your child's grades are suffering. If your kid doesn't show up to school, they have to tell you. And except when your child is suffering from a mental anxiety, depression, some sort of mental health crisis, it is a mental health crisis. Okay. No one wants to call it a disease. It's not, it can be gender dysphoria is actually a clinically diagnosed disease, but your child is suffering from some sort of mental condition, stress, that they are questioning their identity. It just happens to be gender identity, and they don't have to tell you. So they have to tell you if their grades are, they don't have to tell you when they want to, they hate their entire body. They hate their identity. They hate who they are so much so that they want to change their name, change how people refer to them, change how they dress, change their appearance, and then maybe even start taking drugs and actually amputate healthy parts of their body. Like, I don't need to know that as a parent. And the irony of all ironies, what you're saying, Phil, is that the if you look at the legislative history behind those bills, the one that you are obligated to tell about the grades, it's because, and they cite to studies over and over again. So like before COVID, all like the studies that were relevant and true before COVID, and same with trans. So before this trans agenda, parents were integral to children's overall mental well-being and success. And that's why you had to tell parents. You have got to get parents involved, because if their grades are suffering, there's something going on and parents need to be involved, so that you can come up with like a support plan at school and then have the parents at home, you know, working collaboratively. You can't like, you know, train the kid at school, super tutor them at school and then go home and have the wheels fall off. They need, you know, you need to be collaborating with the place and the people that they spend a majority of their time with, and also have that support system. So when it comes to grades, parents are integral, but when it comes to children's gender identity, they're not only not important to that mental health issue, but they're actually public enemy number one. People just are being intellectually dishonest. If they're going to pretend that that's true, that people are being intellectual, the left is being intellectually dishonest. And what they do is, going back to that Trojan horse analogy, is they take trans kids, suicide, want to kill themselves. Trans kids want to suicide themselves, and they don't have the data to support that. Trans kids do want to commit suicide because they are typically suffering from, and this is, again, clinically, statistically, there are peer-reviewed studies showing they traditionally are suffering from ADD, ADHD, depression, anxiety. There are other mental health conditions that go along with and manifest themselves in gender confusion. And number three, another huge reason why they want to kill themselves is because they're living a lie, because they're not coming out to their parents. If they were given the opportunity and were told, given a supportive environment and encouraged and given tools to have a great, meaningful conversation with their parents, the suicidality would go down. The stress and anxiety would go down. But that's not what schools are doing. And the other thing I want to say very quickly is everybody needs to get involved. Like, you need to understand these are the laws, understand California legislature is coming after your children, and understand that what's happening is already happening. Like, I'm not making this up and sounding the alarm on these bills because I think that one day, because I'm some hysterical Orange County housewife, like people like to call me, it says I'm already getting the phone calls. Abigail Martinez is already a mom whose child was removed from her custody and care because she would not affirm her child's self-selected gender identity because her daughter was bipolar. Don't quote me on that. She had mental health issues. And when the transgender, this is just a couple of years ago, started gaining, momentum, she went with the trans thing. And her Abigail said she wanted to take her daughter to get therapy. And they said no. And the school took her daughter, got her removed from her mother's care, got her into, protective service, into a foster care where she was pumped full of hormones and, all the whole health care plan, gender for me health care plan. Meanwhile, they're investigating her for emotional and psychological abuse. This is before these bills were even written. Okay. Was exonerated, gets her daughter back, and her daughter kills herself because her daughter didn't get the treatment that she needed for 3 years and instead got pumped full of hormone raging inducing. They make you super horny. Those hormones make you super aggressive. They make you super horny. I don't know what the clinical word is. They make you very she was all over the place. And she stepped in front of a train and killed herself. So this is already happening. Adam Vina's son is 3 or 4 years old saying he's non-binary. Why? Because his wife got awarded custody because he would not affirm. This already happened. This bill just passed out of the legislature. Harrison Tinsley's wife wants to raise their children, his son, non-binary. It's videos of his son crying. I don't want to wear a dress. I'm not a girl. I don't want to wear high heels. I don't want to wear makeup. And he's in a custody dispute. And that judge is threatening to take his son away from him. All of this stuff is already happening. These children, I don't know if you know, what was the name? The case that just settled with Harmeet Dhillon. They started to transition her child behind her back at school. You need to go to campus and you need to get our parental notification policy. Try and find conservative board members to get them to pass the policy. And you need to go into your schools and to your boards, ask them, email them, and do FOIA, public records requests, and demand to know if they have gender transitioning programs, because these programs are already being implemented at your school. So the parental notification policy is something that is in response to these cases that are already happening and these gender transitioning programs that are already rolling out at your school. The teachers are all up in arms like, oh, the parental notification policy is putting new, expectations and obligations on teachers. It's like, you're already getting trained how to profile children to see who's gender curious, profile their families to see who doesn't have a safe space at home. And you're already being trained to create a safe environment for them at school. They're already going after your kids at school. It's already happening. This is not. That's why I do the work. That's why I know, I'm not trying to be inflammatory. I already am getting the phone call. We already have the cases. They're already happening. Google Abigail Martinez, Google Adam Vina, Google Harrison Tinsley. You will find Chloe Cole, detransitioner. All of these people exist. It's already happening. And these bills were made to, like you guys said, solidify, concretize these policies that are already in existence and remove parents from being involved and having a say in what's going on in their children's school.
I don't think it's
a fun podcast.
Oh, no, it's serious stuff because I think people need to know how much of this is coming down the pike right now and how serious this is. This is becoming law in California. The governor is signing this into law. And I don't think it's tinfoil hat-ish to look at the bills that you've listed and see there is a pattern here. There is something that they're trying to do here It's not mm-hmm. hidden in the details. We're not imagining this. When you, one, start to remove the voters' ability to elect their own local representatives, you remove the ability of those duly elected local officials to enact the will of the people who elected them. You start mm-hmm. to punish people who show up to school boards and make their voices heard, like this one bill, SB 596, which fines someone $1,000 and or a year in jail for expressing their anger at school board meetings. And you start to realize, okay, so we can't have control over our local public schools. And then they start to force these children and put a wedge between you and your children, and they force them into the arms of the state, whether it's through the school, whether it's through these shelters. And you start to see there's sort of a pattern here of like, well, if we expand the authority of the school and we push parents out so they have no say in what our school does, then we can sort of keep them behind this wall of secrecy, behind this curtain of secrecy. We can do what we want. We can indoctrinate them behind this curtain. And then, oh, if you have a problem with that, okay, well, too late. We're going to take your kid away anyway. So I don't think it's tinfoil hat-ish or conspiracy at all. I mean, anybody who has half a brain can look at the pattern of these bills and what California is passing this year and go, they have a concerted effort and they have an agenda to do something and to try and put a wedge between parents and their children and take children away from their parents. I honestly believe that. And people who know me, I don't say inflammatory things just to, you know, get the clicks and the views and all that stuff. I try to break things down from a logical perspective, but logically you have to look at all this together and put the puzzle pieces together and go, there's a concerted effort and people need to know about that. So that's why I think it's good that we're talking about this and letting people know this is what's coming out of the session this year alone.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are all the bills. And there's AB 1078, which will, like you said, dictate what material and curricula your students read. Okay. So they're mandatory in school. AB 5 is about, you know, training teachers how to, and it's all, again, to be supportive of LGBTQT and trans youth. No mention of detransitioning children. But I don't even want to go. You just summarized the bills perfectly. They're going to take them from your homes with the first set of bills that we talked about, or you're going to keep your children if you can, and they're still going to get their agenda, plug in their ideas through the mandated curricula, and silencing board members, removing board members, and removing parents who have the gumption to try and oppose. All these bills except for 596. Have passed out of the California legislature. They're on their way to Gavin Newsom's desk. He has 12 days or until September 19th to sign these bills into law. So I would really like to, you know, I don't know when we're going to end, but I do want to make sure that we get in that everyone should be calling Gavin Newsom every single day on your way to work, on your lunch break. It takes literally 20 seconds because you're just going to list the bills. I don't know if you like post this with a caption or anything, but you're just going to say, I'm calling to, you know, demand that the governor veto AB 665, AB 997, AB 223, AB 5, AB 1078, SB 596 when it comes to his desk. So we just need to go over and over and over again on these bills and just keep calling him. You know, truthfully, between you and me, I don't know what the chance of success of that is going to be. But he does have presidential aspirations. So it's really important, that he knows that we're awake and we're watching him and we'll remember this and we will remember this when he comes and runs for president. And also share this information because what happens in California, first of all, anybody can call the governor. You can have your in-laws and your families in Colorado and Texas and whatever calling. Everybody should be calling him and everybody should be calling him because if he becomes president, it will come to their state. So everyone should be calling this. Everyone has a vested interest in this. But the second thing that people need to do is mark their calendars. Well, I can't talk about it yet, but we will get you. I've been looking at my phone, totally transparent, because we have a next step for you guys. I'll let Phil will be the first to know as soon as it's confirmed. But as you know me, Phil, we like a good show of force. So we will, of peaceful force. So we will be having a gathering within the next 5 days of parents and concerned citizens, because it's wild. There's grandparents, aunts, and uncles, people without kids, because they're like, this is wrong. This is wrong. We don't do this. And the last thing, so I'll get you that information once it's finalized and confirmed. But we, I don't know if you know, but protectkidsca.com is another thing that we put together. There are three initiatives that we got on, we're trying to get on the ballot for November. Because like I said, California legislature, the Capitol is not protecting us. They're actually actively coming after us. And our elected representatives are out to freaking lunch, are compromised. So we have three initiatives. One is to, I don't want to misquote them, so let me just really quickly pull them up. One is to protect girls' spaces and sports. Another one is about parental notification and transparency. And let me put here, the last one is, I just want to get the right messaging for you. Protect girls, parent notification from schools, protect girls' sports, and prevent child sterilization. So that's basically, you know, would be illegal, making it illegal to do render gender affirming care to minors. Protecting girls' sports and spaces obviously is getting, you know, male individuals out of their locker rooms, bathrooms, and their sports. Mm-hmm. And then the parental notification policy is what we are trying to do right now on a local level. We have got to protect ourselves. Right now, what you can do is talk to your kids, go to your school, talk to the teachers, talk to your principal, find out if they have a gender affirming care or gender transitioning policy in place or anything to that effect. Go to your next school board meeting, demand to find out, do a public records request, demand to find out, and start having conversations with your kids right now. That's how you start now. And then try and get what our parental notification policy passed in your district. If you're working on that and you need help, like your board members are scared, they don't understand the policy, they don't want to get sued, Aaron Friday, Jennifer Kennedy, or myself, Dean Browley also, we will help you. We will Zoom with you. We will meet. We will explain the law and explain how these policies are legal and how they can defend themselves. And then really, really, really go find out, go to protectkidsca.com, go to the initiative, sign up for updates. Because we need to get about 576,000 signatures in 180 days once they get green lighted. And those will create laws. We will create our own laws. We'll put them on the ballot come November. But we have to get them on the ballot first. Mm-hmm. So we need to get those signatures in 180 days. And we'll need everybody's support to do that. And we can start spreading awareness now. So once we get them on the ballot, we can start getting the once we get them green lighted, we start getting the signatures. If we get 576,000, they get on the ballot in November, and we know they're going to pass because that Rasmussen poll, that survey they did, it's like overwhelming. It's like 80% of Californians absolutely believe that parents should be notified when their child is suffering mental health issues. So these initiatives will pass. We just need to get them on the ballot.
We're coming up on the hour, and I'll make sure I try to spread as much of this as possible. I'll put all this stuff in the show notes. I want to share your stuff as well. Maybe we can organize some sort of call to action. I think that'd be great. That always seems to work really well. Sometimes if you just make it easy and just do a Google Doc that people can, like a script people can read off of, that usually seems to work really well. One law before we hop off that I wanted to comment on, which as attorneys scares the crap out of me, SB 40, which incentivizes people to be attorneys to be reported to the state bar who have conspired or actually engaged in, quote, treason, sedition, or insurrection against California and the USA. So to me, that sounds like anybody who could be MAGA, we want to report to the state bar, or if you filed a lawsuit that challenges the governor or state government.
Right. So if you sue the governor, like we did, if you sue the state, if you sue Joe Biden, I mean, very easily you will be accused of insurrection and treason. I mean, I can't think, that law is SB 40. That's Senator Tom Umberg's law. He's in here in Orange County. He used to be a JAG judge. He's an attorney, a former judge. He's a disgrace to the legal profession. He makes me sick. He jockeyed AB 957. He should know better. AB 957 is void for ambiguity on its face. It violates First Amendment, you know, right, exercise of free religion, free speech, compelled speech, all of it. He is the least indicative, you know, least indicated to be representing our profession. And the gall of his, that is the last piece. And I actually never talked about SB 40 because it was almost like it was too, I didn't even want to breathe life into it. And we had, you know, good information that it wasn't proceeding, and it's not going to move out of the legislature. But yeah, that's from Senator Tom Umberg. If you live in Villa Park in that area in Orange, Santa Ana area, he jockeyed 957. So he's the one that's removing custody of children. I want to say one thing really quickly on 957. People are talking about, you know, one of the problems with that bill, besides all those constitutional free exercise of religion, free speech, compelled speech, your due process rights, fundamental 14th Amendment due process rights to manage the care and custody and upbringing, well-being, education, religion, health of your child, which has been protected by the Supreme Court for over 100 years. Aside from that, in addition to that, the bill is extremely poorly written, and it says whoever affirms, like a judge needs to look at the health, safety, and welfare, and that includes who affirms the child. And there's no definition of affirmation. And this is super, super, super important, and I hate that we waited till the end, but I hope people are still listening. There's no definition of affirm, and affirm means, it can mean two things, social affirmation or medical affirmation. Social is hair, cut, name, pronouns, clothing. Medical, obviously, is, you know, has cross-sex hormones, you know, surgery, mastectomies, you know, all the vaginoplasty, all those things. So there's no definition of affirm. So you have three options. You have one scenario where one parent is the affirming parent, the other is not, that person's going to get custody. You have two parents who are both affirming. Who wins? Is it the most extreme affirming parent? Is it me because I want to get our daughter top surgery, even though she's four and she doesn't need top surgery or even want it, but I'm the most affirming parent. What happens there? Mm-hmm. Number two. Number three, no one is talking about this, and this is what you're referring to, Camille, is when, and I mentioned this in the Fox News interview that kind of went viral, is if both parents, I hate you, Phil, we're getting divorced, wasn't meant to be, you know, it's not you, it's me, but we do agree that we will never affirm, or we're certainly not going to affirm our five-year-old, our three-year-old, our two-year-old, our 11-year-old. Then that means under this law, the way it's written is that both of us are acting contrary to or jeopardizing our child's health, safety, and welfare. That means that the child, mark my words, it's going to happen. Both of the parents are acting, jeopardizing their health, safety, and welfare. Both of the parents are not acting in the child's best interests. Those are the two terms of art used in the law. And the child will be removed from both of us, which is the last way, Bethany, that they're going to get them into those foster care systems. So this is coming after you. Another bill that wasn't mentioned because it got amended by Anna Caballero and Angelique Ashby, Aguiar Curry, Luz Rivas, is SB 599, because people are like, I'm never going to get a divorce and it doesn't matter to me. Well, SB 599 says visitation. If you don't affirm for visitation, so now you lost custody because you're not the affirming parent. Now you won't even get to visit because you're not the affirming parent. And in these laws, in that law 599, it talks about domestic abuse. 599 was written about visitation and changing visitation to be remote, whether it's domestic abuse, and there are allegations of domestic abuse. And they talk about the child's health, safety, and welfare. They talk about the penal code. They talk about child abuse. They talk about child neglect and child endangerment. And I said it from the very get-go. I go, this definition is going to go to the penal code. And here we have 599 that's AB 957. They're taking that definition of, you know, health, safety, and welfare to include affirmation in terms of custody. They're using it for visitation. And it is now going to go over into the penal code for child abuse, endangerment, and neglect. So these bills, you think I'm never going to get a divorce and I'm never going to fight over my child. But these bills, again, it's the foothold, and it will soon be able to reach you. And you may find yourself in the situation as Abigail Martinez, where your child is confused because they're 14 and they're hormonal and they hate you because you took away their TikTok, like every single normal 14-year-old, and you can be accused of abusing, mentally or emotionally abusing your child, or endangering them, or neglecting them for refusing to get them gender-affirming care, and you too will lose custody, and you also won't be able to visit your kid. So these bills are just really egregious on all levels. They came after the lawyers with SB 40. They came after the parents with SB 596 and 665 and 957. You've got to get involved, like Phil said, at the local level. That's where you can control things, and it trickles up, and we will get these criminals out of office. Because hopefully, for as bad as it is, hopefully with this, people understand. Please go to Facts, Law, Truth, Justice, our website. My Instagram. I'm amplifying a lot of other accounts who are. We're doing a legislator scorecard. It's with California Parents United, all spelled out. And we're doing a scorecard of all the legislators and how they voted on these bills, because these legislators do not represent your interests. They do not care about children. They do not care about families, and they need to be voted out, and you need to replace them. So, you know, it's going to take a lot of work, but at least it's really horrible, but at least we're all awake, and now we can unite and figure out a way to resume our position at the table, because that's where we belong.
Yeah, I think it's important that people get involved and people pick up the phone, email.
Yeah.
As we saw with SB 14, Newsom is prone to caving to public pressure. Almost funny enough, yeah. He seemed to be trying to take credit for SB 14 passing, which was disgusting that now all of a sudden he's trying to take credit for it. But anyway. Public pressure does work, and Diane Dixon was on a couple weeks ago, definitely made it very clear. People think just because there's a super majority of Democrats, public pressure does work. If you speak up and you're loud enough and you create enough noise with the legislature, they do back off of this stuff because they're politicians, and if they see the it's very unpopular, they will back off of this stuff. So we'll definitely work together and get some sort of call action to get this out there so people can contact the governor, let them know that they oppose these bills. But we're coming up, we're actually a little over an hour, so we got some extra bonus time out of you. Before we sign off for the night, is there any final thoughts? Nicole, you were a great guest, and obviously don't be a stranger. I think you need to come back more often. It's sad that it took this long.
I love you guys. You were so great. Let's do it again and again and again. No, final words is just what you just said. And then, you know, for all these things, these horrible things that are happening, there are really good things that are happening as well. They're going to repeal AB 2098. We're winning our lawsuits. We're getting the parental notification policies passed, you know. But let's not wait for the lawyers to come. I guess my thing is that we can stave like off a lot. I'll say this. The Revolutionary War was won with 3% of the population. Okay. If we would have won, it would have been a lot less death and dismemberment if just a little bit more had joined the fight a little earlier. So we're the 3%. People listening here, I'm sure, are part of the 3% who are engaged and who are pushing back and getting engaged locally. And really, 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 I'm literally talking about start in your classroom, start having these conversations, start sharing this podcast, our website, Protect Kids CA, the initiatives, California Parents Coalition. Like, that's where the parental notification is. I'll give you all of these links. Literally copy and paste it and send it to your entire, do a BCC email blast, send it to everybody. Because people don't know what's going on. And when they find out what's happening, they're appalled. Like, it's not even like, oh, that's really unfortunate. They're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, they literally are like, what are you talking about? And if you set Google, like I said, Abigail Martinez, Harrison Tinsley, Adam Vina, it's happening. So people don't know, and we just need to sound the alarm, and people are willing to write. Because the more, like I said, if we just have more, we can end this a lot sooner. The same way with COVID. If people had just said no from the get-go, we were right on every issue. We were right on every single issue, but it took 2 years to get there. How many people were vaccinated against their will? How many people were injured? How many people lost their jobs, their pensions, you know, their careers, so their homes, their families? We are right. The law is on your side. We would not be doing this if we didn't know that for 100% certainty. So just share this, you know, share this information, connect with people, and stay post, you know, stay tuned, follow us for updates, and we will guide you to final victory over these criminal California criminal cartel. We will win. We will prevail. We just want to minimize the damage in the meantime.
I don't think we could have ended any stronger than that. So I'm going to end every show as I always do, which is, if you like this show, make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, hit the notification bell on all of our platforms. And like Nicole said, best thing you can do to help spread the word and support this show is just share this with somebody, and especially this episode. Share this with concerned parents. Share this with everybody, because I think the more people know about this, I think more people will be shocked and appalled at what's going on, that this is actually stuff that's becoming law here in California. So with that, we'll say goodnight to everybody. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you, guys. Good night.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.